You're listening to the Zandbergen Report, where wealth strategies and investment wisdom collide with Bart Zandbergen, your distinguished host and certified financial planner.
Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, a showcase for wealth strategies and investment wisdom that's essential for our evolving world. I'm your host, Bart Zandbergen. In studio, as usual, we have Paul. Paul, I've noticed something today.
Yes, you did.
What? Yeah, you're not having corporate meetings or interviews today because you're back in the Paul garb of hoodies and jeans.
That's right. I'm dressed back like I'm a college student back in the 60s, man. Power to the people.
Well, I'm real excited today to have a longtime friend and business associate, Michael Marion from Marion Consulting. In my area of expertise in financial advising as a CFP, of course, we are exposed to all areas of financial planning, from investments to tax planning, retirement planning, insurance planning, which includes life and disability insurance. But I've found that in order to really do the best service to my clients, you really got to have an expert. And that's what Michael has been for me and for our clients. So, Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hey, Mike, and although I've built you up just a bit, do you mind telling the audience a little bit about, you know, what brought you where you are today?
Well, I started in the insurance business when I was 20 years old, and that was 39 years ago. And so I was pretty young, and I had to have a really good mentor that taught me that the big life insurance policies were purchased by the wealthiest people, because of the estate tax liabilities. So I learned at an early age that in order to go after some large life insurance opportunities, I had to find out how to do estate planning and to use life insurance as an estate liquidity tool.
Okay, great. And so, wow, 39 years, and always in your own practice?
Well, I started in a prudential office for a couple of years, and then I got mentored by an industry leader for about 4 years. And so for the last, I'd say, 34 years, I've been on my own.
Okay. All right. So Michael and I were talking, and one thing I want to make really clear is this is not Life Insurance 101, today's episode. We're going to go right to the top, right for advanced planning, high net worth planning. Letitia and I, in one of our shows, we're going to cover more Life Insurance 101. And I will say that there's, I don't know if you actually ever heard this before, Michael, but it's one of signs that I picked up really early in my career. And I say that life insurance is a lot like broccoli. I eat broccoli not because I really enjoy it or like it, because I know it's good for me. And I find in a lot of cases, especially in the higher net worth, like, you may not like life insurance, but it's often good for you.
Absolutely.
All right. So I know there's a couple of things I want to make sure we cover today. And this one kind of overlaps, I think, to a great degree what you and I both do together. In our world in investments, there's asset classes, and there's stocks, and there's bonds, and there's alternative investments. And I firmly believe that for most people, in most cases, that life insurance has a place as part of an asset allocation. What do you think about that?
I absolutely agree. In fact, I think one of my biggest surprises after 39 years in practice is why there is such a negative bias deeply rooted in many professionals against life insurance. Yeah. And so if I may say that life insurance is a unique asset class specifically designed to provide liquidity at the death of two people in the family unit, husband and wife, for that second to die estate tax liability.
Now, you and I talked before about kind of comparing life insurance to bonds or muni bonds. Tell me a little more about that.
Well, I had an opportunity where one of my attorneys that I work with had a client with approximately $100 million of liquidity on about a $300 million estate. And my attorney said to me, he goes, Michael, I think he needs life insurance for liquidity. However, he's totally against it. He feels that he has all the liquidity he needs. So put something together that answers the question, why would somebody that has all the liquidity they need to pay estate tax, why would they buy life insurance? So I just did a simple allocation. I said, let's take $72,000 a year out of the bond portfolio. There's millions of dollars in the bond portfolio. Let's leave the millions there, but take out $72,000 a year and allocate it to a different asset class designed to provide liquidity, and that's second-to-die life insurance. Well, that $72,000 a year generates $10 million worth of tax-free estate liquidity until they're 100 years old. So I said, now let's compare that to the bond portfolio. If I take the bond portfolio and I allocate and I left that $72,000 there for 37 years, I'd have about $5 million in bonds. yet I have $10 million worth of life insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a guaranteed life insurance product.
Yeah.
So when I was able to demonstrate that to them, they actually said, well, why do I hate life insurance? That was the quote from the client.
Yeah.
Why do I hate life insurance? Because that made so much sense.
Yeah, again, I'm going back to the broccoli.
Exactly.
You know what? You mentioned a term that maybe not everybody knows. Describe Second to Die.
Second to Die was designed when we had an unlimited marital deduction between spouses. So back before Ronald Reagan, if a husband or wife died, there was an estate tax at the first death.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of insurance being placed to cover that estate tax liability so the surviving spouse didn't have to sell assets. Ronald Reagan gave us an unlimited marital deduction, and we still have it today. So that means the insurance industry created a product that says, we're a very wealthy family. We don't need insurance for the surviving spouse. What we need is liquidity when both spouses die. So the insurance industry created a product called Second to Die, or survivorship life insurance. So it doesn't pay when the first spouse dies. It pays when the second spouse dies.
Yep.
And that's when we need the liquidity for the estate tax.
Okay. So, right. We use it exactly and precisely for estate taxes and estate planning. Great. You know, so we both know that life insurance has many different needs. One, of course, is estate liquidity. And I think many of our listeners might not know that life insurance, when designed properly, is also a great retirement plan or tool or supplemental retirement tool. I know you and I have talked about an example that was in the headline news that Jim Harbaugh from University of Michigan. Do you want to elaborate a little bit more on that?
Sure. I mean, this is anybody that wants to Google Jim Harbaugh and his bonus structure, they will find that the University of Michigan decided to give him a $14 million bonus paid over 7 years, $2 million a year over 7 years, and they paid it into an indexed universal life insurance product. And this is because now we have $14 million invested in the market, growing in a tax-efficient environment. Later, when he's 66 years old, according to the plan that they designed, he's looking to receive about $1.4 million a year income until he's 98 years old, tax-free.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Okay, that's about $45 million worth of tax-free income generated by that plan.
Yeah.
That's a significant bonus for a celebrity.
Yeah.
He's obviously a celebrity. Now, we've done many of these for executives of successful, closely held businesses as well.
Yeah. You mentioned index universal life. So relatively speaking in the life insurance world, I think that's a newer term. I mean, back when I first got in the business, variable universal life was the big thing, and before that was universal life. So you want to elaborate on the differences?
Sure.
Between?
Well, variable universal life was very popular when the markets were going gangbusters.
Yeah.
And people would say, why do I want to invest premium dollars into a product that's earning 4% and a fixed universal life chassis?
Yeah.
So the insurance industry is always quick to create what people want. And what they wanted was the ability to take their cash value and invest it in the market. And so, and they did. And these insurance products have 40 or 50 mutual funds that they can invest in. They're like mutual funds. But what happened is when we had major market corrections and we have a 20 or 25% hit to cash values, somebody that was paying $100,000 premium is now getting a premium call for $200,000.
Yeah.
And they weren't planning that. So that became a real black eye, really, to the insurance industry. The product is still available for sale. But what the insurance industry did to protect that was created indexed universal life. Now, it allows our clients the ability to invest in the markets, international markets, U.S. markets, all kinds of different indices are available. But they universally, they all have a floor. So in a 20% down market, which, you know, we might have a big correction in the next few years, they're never going to go below zero. Now, what do they pay for that? They pay on the upside. If the market does, if the market does 19%, they're going to be capped. And those caps vary at, you know, 8.5% or 9.5% or 10% or 11% or 13%.
Yeah.
But you have, in essence, a collar. So you get market exposure, but you're never crawling back from losses.
Yeah. So, you know, I've talked a little bit about this, again, starting the business in the early 90s, and so VULs, Variable Universal Life, where that was the thing, had a lot of clients we placed in there. Guess what I'm doing with those clients today? Rolling them into IULs.
Index Universal Life, absolutely.
It's just because I think the possibility of market volatility is high, so might as well lock in what they've earned and give some protection, and I think the collar is reasonable.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, so let's switch gears again for a second. we've worked on a few clients, and you presented something that I had never heard of before and that I really like. And so we have a generic term for it, calling it the option concept.
Yes.
But I think that would be interesting to talk about just in what you can.
Well, this is a little bit more technical than I think we can get into in a short show.
Sure.
However, what I discovered in 2004 was something that really changed my career. And what happened was I had a lot of clients up to that point already. Then half of them felt like they had too much insurance, and half of them felt like they hated insurance and didn't want to buy any insurance. So what I did was I created a design that allowed them to have an option on insurance. So if a client said, I have a need for $10 million of insurance, but I'm not prepared to pay for that right now. What we did is we created an opportunity for them to put $10 million of insurance in place for a very minor commitment and give them the option, depending on their ages, for, say, 10 years or 15 years or 20 years, any time in those span of years, if they decided that they needed insurance, they have it. They don't have to then wait and go out and get medically underwritten. So, for example, we have had clients that had, I had one in particular that had a $65 million option. 4 years later, got brain cancer. Okay.
Yeah.
He was very
exercise.
he's very happy he had the option. How much?
Yeah.
I used to tell all my clients, how much insurance would you buy today if you knew you were going to get a terminal cancer diagnosis next week? You'd buy all you could get.
Yeah.
Okay. But that's the hard thing. People don't want to spend money on something they don't think they're going to need, and as soon as they know they need it, maybe they can't get it.
Yeah. And, you know, interesting to that point, I just mentioned that we're converting some of our VULs to IULs, and they're having to go through underwriting again. And I'm really surprised. I'm going to say 30% of the insureds have gone from a preferred or super preferred status down to a substandard, meaning less than good health, which is, going back to your option concept, hey, if you are younger and or at the very least healthy, now's a great time.
Right. Well, and I've had more clients lose their insurability than lose their life at this stage of my career.
Huh?
Okay, so I've probably paid out maybe 20, 25 significant death claims.
Yeah.
But I've had a lot more people in my career get cancer or high blood pressure or just other things that cause them to be uninsurable.
Yeah. All right.
And so the option allows them to, at the end of the option term, by the way, whatever financial commitment they made to buy the option, they get that premium back.
Yeah, I was hoping you were going to say that, because I knew that was the
okay,
answer.
Okay, so I apologize.
Yeah.
It's like they're laying up some money in order to have the option, but if they decide not to exercise the option, all they're out is the cost, the opportunity cost.
Yeah.
Of having laid out some money, and not that much.
Yeah, and I think it's genius. I love it. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
When you use the Premier Rewards Gold Card from American Express, the rewards points can keep on multiplying. By 3 with triple points on airfare, by 2 with double points on gas and groceries, and a single point for pretty much every other dollar you spend on the card. Then, start choosing from over a million rewards to redeem all those points. Apply today and the annual fee for the first year is on us. Call 1-800-AXP-GOLD or visit axpgold.com. The annual fee for the card is $175. See terms, conditions, and restrictions at axpgold.com.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest. Higher.
All right, we're back. Mike and I were talking kind of offline. We're going to circle back for a second on the IUL. And one of the things that I really liked on, and we're not going to name the carrier, but the ability, so we've already talked about the collar, the 0% on the low and then whatever the high side is, but the ability on this particular product to pick the two or three of the best indexes over that previous period, which has done really good performance-wise compared to just a traditional IUL.
Yes. In fact, those three indexes are the S&P 500, the Euro Stock 50, and the Hang Seng. And so rather than, Bart, you allocating your client one-third, one-third, one-third to diversify among three markets, what this carrier does is it says, no, we're just going to hold the money for whatever time period you selected, and those time periods are only two years or five. And at the end of that 2 year, for example, whichever one of those three indexes did best, we're going to give the client 75% of that return. And whoever came in worst, we're throwing it out. And then, obviously, who's ever second, they get 25%. So you're never trying to figure out who's going to win the race. You know at the end of the 2 years or the 5 years, you're going to get 75% of the winner, 25% of the second place. And its structure is remarkable, and there's only really one carrier in the industry that has that product.
I kind of, when I think about that, I kind of wish there was a fund like that we can use outside insurance for the rest of our portfolio.
Absolutely.
You know, I think there's something to be said for that. All right. So we have both been faced with situations where a client, very high net worth, and perhaps no liquidity for various reasons. One I can think of just because they're all in real estate, commercial real estate. On the other hand, let's say they're $100 million net worth. They've got an extensive estate tax burden. So I know there's ways to get life insurance and then actually, quote unquote, borrow, what they call premium finance, so they don't necessarily have to come out of pocket and still be able to have the insurance. I know that's much more up your alley, so can you share with the listeners about that?
Yes. Premium financing has become very popular with these low interest rate environment. And so clients are saying, hey, we have our money at work far more effective than the interest rate would charge if we went to our private bank and borrowed at 2% or 2.25%. So there's a lot of action where people are buying very large life insurance policies and financing the premium. I say be very cautious, though, because some of these are scams. I've seen these 45-year-olds where they expect this bank financing to go out for 50 years. Now, I think that's not going to work very well. I like premium financing, but I want it to be for a determined period of time in advance, say 10 years or 12 or 15. And where I like it is where the client says, I don't have the liquidity now, or I have a better place to put my money today, but I'm expecting a liquidity event. I'm going to sell my business in 7 years. So there's a perfect opportunity to initiate a premium finance structure, knowing that in a particular predetermined time frame, we have an exit strategy, and we're going to pay off that bank loan. But meanwhile, we're going to use very low interest rates to help buy that insurance. Yeah. A lot of times we use the insurance policy itself as collateral. So if at the end of the, say, the 10-year term, the liquidity event did not happen, and the client says, well, gee, now I'm still in the situation where I don't want to pay back that loan, we can surrender the policy and pay off the loan. Mm-hmm. So we do, in essence, it gives us about a 10-year opportunity, and the interest cost of that loan is like term insurance.
Yeah.
It's like a term insurance cost.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad you said that with the kind of the foreseen end, because I, too, when I've seen those that go on forever, I can, it loses some of its attractiveness.
Yes, and we don't have time to tell you about some of the scams that are out there. I just say enter this field cautiously, but it is certainly, I present it almost every major case to a client because process of elimination. If I don't present it and they later hear about it on the golf course, I find myself in a little bit of an uncomfortable spot.
Yeah.
But I'm also quite surprised how many times I will offer premium financing to a client and their reaction is no.
You know, you and I introduced you to a provider or a vendor not so long ago, and it was a form of premium financing, right? But it was back with where they were raised like private bonds.
It was a private placement bond offering.
Yeah.
And those are going to be for very, very, very large deals.
Yeah.
The legal and the fees and such to structure that are very significant.
Yeah.
And I would say that unless you're ready to put a bond offering in the 20 plus million dollar range, probably not. And then I think in the case you were showing me, they're much, much less than that.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Okay. So we're going to totally switch gears because this is going to cross over for something that you and I both might actively participate in. So the general term is life settlements. I know you know what that is. You'll talk about that. We've talked before that we have basically a hedge fund that invests in life settlements. It has I think the term life settlements has kind of a checkered past, because there's been both, like with many products or services, that have been both good and bad. So what's your kind of experience, and what do you know about life settlements?
Well, the life settlement business was really booming pre-2008, and there was a lot of money in pools like your fund that were eager to go out and buy policies. What happened was the life expectancies that were being used were dramatically wrong. So a lot of these funds lost a lot of money. Also, we had the financial fiasco of 2008 and 2009.
Yeah.
And so the money dried up for life settlements, but it is back. But what's happened to the life settlement industry now is they're cherry picking for the best opportunities. So whereas, for example, I sold a $15 million policy to a life settlement fund on a 72-year-old man. And he turned around and used that $1 million that he got for that $15 million term policy we sold.
Yeah.
And he went out and bought a new $15 million policy at preferred rates.
Huh.
Now, yeah, there's something was wrong there. What the life settlement buyer thinks that the guy's going to die soon, and the new insurance company says the guy's a preferred risk.
Yeah.
Well, long story short, by the way, the guy died in 4 years. So, you know, the life settlement company actually did win on that.
Yeah.
But what's happened now is life settlement companies will not look at a 72-year-old that's healthy.
Yeah.
You got to be late into your 70s, into your 80s. You have to have some health impairments.
Yeah.
And then my advice to my client first is, if you are older and impaired, what can we do to get you to keep this policy?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but if you're in a situation where you absolutely don't need it and there's a solution better than surrender, then we have an opportunity to do life settlement.
Yeah.
And the business is good these days still.
Yeah, so speaking of the cherry picking, so the fund that we use has a 5-year life expectancy. So they do extensive underwriting, and for whether the person's very old or up there in age, and or there's a terminal illness. So, but another thing that apparently why people will sell a policy, I found kind of interesting. Let's say, I'll use me as an example. Let's say 40 years from now, and let's, for whatever reason, my wife predeceases me and my kids are you know, doing fine. Maybe I want to use that money for something. Now I'm super old. Maybe I want to use the money for something else. So I might surrender the policy because I just no longer have a need for it.
Right.
Not surrender, but sell it, I mean.
Sell it, yeah. You know, that's, if you can sell it for more than you can surrender it, that's an option that we have today.
Okay. Great.
By the way, as an advisor, if I have a terminally ill client that owns life insurance, I'm going to do everything I can to help him keep it.
I'm with you on that. Okay, Michael, I told you, half hour goes by really fast, doesn't it?
Yes, well, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to be here
Of course. It's certainly been a pleasure having you today, and if you've listened in the previous shows, you know I have the honor of asking that final thought question. And so please share with us your ultimate lesson learned over your tenure as a life insurance professional.
Well, that life insurance is an asset class that has to be sold. People don't go and buy life insurance because they want it. Like you go into the hardware store to buy a drill bit. You don't want a drill bit. You want a hole.
Yeah.
So life insurance has to be sold by professionals that know what they're doing and know how to integrate it with technical things. And it just surprises me that there's such a bias by some that think that life insurance, that's old school.
Yeah.
These insurance companies are very sophisticated and they know how to deliver value to their client.
All right. You just got to get the hole in the wall.
You got to get the hole.
All right. Michael, thanks again for joining us in the studio today. And for those who want to learn more about Michael and his business, you can visit him at www.marionconsulting.com. That's M-A-R-I-O-N, consulting.com. Thanks so much, everyone who has turned in. We look forward to being back in the studio next week. Cheers.
Tune in next week for the latest edition of the Zandbergen Report, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Catch up on our recent shows by visiting www.bartzandbergen.com. Interested in being a featured guest on our show or have a question you'd like to hear us answer on the Zandbergen Report? Email podcast@bartzandbergen.com.
The Zandbergen Report is a production of OC Talk Radio and is provided for educational purposes only. The content of this program and the views of the guests should not be considered as recommendations by OC Talk Radio or investment advice from the host, Bart Sandbergen, or any other entity attached to this production. Investors should always consult qualified financial, investment, tax, or legal professionals prior to investing.